Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Now, tomorrow, over 1,000 people will receive their Irish citizenship. The virtual event will be streamed from Croke Park. And one of Ireland's newest citizens, Zach Moradi, joins us now. And Zach, congratulations on your new citizenship. I know you're very well known in Leitrim GAA circles, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, we might go back to the beginning because you arrived here when you were 11 years old. Is that right?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I came to Ireland when I was 11 years of age, and I was born in a no man's land.
A no man's land is a very interesting way to describe it.
It is, yeah. But obviously it was a refugee camp in Ramadi in Iraq, and it was kind of in a desert. Where there was about 5,000 or 6,000 Kurdish refugees that ended up there in the 1980s when a war broke out between Iraq and Iran, and Iraq invaded that part of Kurdistan of Iran we lived in, and then people became refugees, and that's where it all started.
And you were there until you were 11. What do you remember of it?
I remember everything, and it was obviously, when I was growing up, it was a dictatorship country, and Saddam Hussein was in charge of the country, and he used to rule the country with an iron fist, and it was a propaganda country. It was just kind of brought up, you know, watching Saddam Hussein, you know, the whole way when you were kids, everybody wanted to be like him because everybody was brainwashed.
Yeah, I know you've talked before about, you know, the school books, and you go into school and there's pictures of him, and you open your school book and there's more pictures of him, Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, you could never get away from him. It was where you were at home or you were outside, it was all about Saddam. And it was the same when you were in school, you know, there'd be a massive picture of him in the middle of the classroom. And we used to only go to school for 2 hours. I say that 2 hours, half an hour, that it'd be about Saddam. You know, the first thing you open the book is a picture of him. And at the end of the book is a picture of him as well, and says, "God bless you" by Saddam Hussein. So he was the god in Iraq in a certain way.
Wow. So you have that, which is obviously very different. And what about just the living conditions then? Can you describe those to us?
Yeah, the living condition, it was when I'm trying to, you know, think back and look back compared to Ireland, it was terrible, you know. But it was terrible. But at the end of the day, we always got fed, and we didn't have the luxury of life what we would have now. But it was my parents had a great life when they were in Kurdistan of Iran. They had a great life, and they were farmers, and they never went hungry, and they had a great life till when that war started, and they became a refugee. And then even their people that ended up in that refugee camp, before they were all business people, there were doctors, all sorts. You know, about 20,000 of them ended up there in 1980, and they ended up, they were all in the same levels. They ended up all, you know. Everybody that got into that refugee camp had nothing. Everybody had to start from scratch, and everybody ate the same food every day. You know, breakfast, everything was the same. So there was no one. Everybody was poor. There's no one there that was rich. That was well off. And you know what? It made me and my family to appreciate life a bit more when we came to Ireland. You know, it just shows. A war can kick off in any country, and then the damage it does, and it's always the, you know, poor civilians that always get caught up in the middle of a war.
Yeah, absolutely, and I can only imagine that you would appreciate life. Why Ireland?
Ireland, well, I didn't really have that choice, or anybody else. I'd say majority of my family didn't even know what Ireland was, but because the UN. The UN were, you know, run the refugee camp, and we came here as a program refugee. So my parents spent over 20 years in a refugee camp, and like even in 1988, my parents actually tried to, you know, smuggle. They tried to, you know, before I was born in 1988, they tried to smuggle back into Iran, you know, through the borders, and then they're closer to the. I don't know if you've ever heard of Halabja. The chemical attack happened in 1988. They killed about 5,000 or 6,000 Kurds in one day, and they were kind of closer to that Halabja area when that happened, the bombing and all that. And then they had to flee back into the refugee camp again. So that's what happened then. And I say we could have ended up in Europe, you know, earlier, and then as well, you know, my dad ended up in prison in Abu Ghraib, and over, you know, he worked in for an oil company. He got a job as a, you know, truck driver, but then he was just working 7 days a week, and then he wasn't getting paid because it's, you know, you're trying to explain to people here, they don't understand, because it was a dictatorship country. Every money you made, it went to the regime.
Okay.
And so then became here. So we were relocated to Ireland in 2002. And we came here as a program refugee. And, you know, a lot of people think, you know, a lot of refugees just come in here, everything's decided in one day. It could take 5 years, you know, to get your paperwork done. And a lot of these people in refugee camps have no passports. They don't have anything. Like my family, we had nothing. We just came here with a piece of paper with our date of birth and our names. And that was it.
And how did you find it? You didn't have English either.
No. It was difficult from the start, but then at the same time, I was a lot younger, so I was 11, so it was easier for me to pick up English as well. It was through sports and GAA, and the people in Carrick and Shannon were lovely as well, the neighbours we had, and, you know, there was a lot of kids my age, and we had a lot of, and my older brother, you know, spoke fluent English, so he was able to make a lot friends with the community a lot quicker than me, and then that's how we just got involved and integrated into Irish society kind of that way, and through sports, I say a lot of it through GAA.
And was Gaelic games really important then, and which did you prefer, the hurling or the football?
Well, I prefer the hurling. I just got more, I got more enjoyment out of playing hurling than football, because a hurler can always take a hurler with chain of slitter and fuck around with it, you know. And when I was starting off, I couldn't hit the ball or anything like that, so it was made it a lot harder for me. But it was just, you know, it's like if you're like, I joined an athletic club as well. I used to be running, and used to be a fella be beating me in a 100-meter race, and I always wanted to beat him, and I always wanted to be a better person, you know. And same with hurling, I couldn't. The next fella beside me, he was able to strike the ball, and kind of annoyed me that I wasn't able to. And I kind of just stuck with it, and I fell in love with the game.
That's amazing. And it's brilliant to have you involved. I wonder tomorrow then, how important it is for you?
Tomorrow it's very important. And I think it's just, you know, like sometimes we have to appreciate what this country has done for me and my family and a lot of, you know, thousands of other refugees and Islam seekers that have come to this country. And, you know, sometimes we appreciate a lot, and you wouldn't hear from us, but we do when we're at home. We do appreciate what this country have done for us, you know. It gave us a kickstart when we came here. We had nothing, basically, you know. But it gave us a kickstart, education and starting school, making friends and getting jobs as we got older. And you know, when we appreciate it, it means a lot. And then a passport will say where we belong. And now, because I was born in no man's land, and it's just the first passport I will ever held. So it kind of make me being a private Irish, Kurdish Irish, as I would say.
It's fantastic. How will you mark it? Or will you mark it, do you think, Zach? Will you be able to?
Sorry, say that again.
Will you be able to mark it in any way?
Well, I went for a few beers last night in Ryan's and Camden Street, just okay, to calm the storm.
You'd be able to go inside tonight or tomorrow, indeed, if you wanted to. Just finally, then, what about the rest of your family? Have they got citizenship?
Yeah, everybody got citizenship. So it kind of took years, because when we came over here, it was like, I think before, it was like after 7 years, you had to apply, you know, and then obviously you have to work as well, and you have to show your earnings and stuff like that, you know. And, you know, it's I think the system is, it's a good way in a way. You have to work for it to get an Irish passport, which I fully understand the way it works, you know. And then it was my own fault as well. I left it too late as well, because there's a lot of paperwork involved. It's just not a form you fill in. You have to get paperwork, and especially I don't have a birth cert, you know, so I had to get a lot of, you know, paperwork. Okay. From solicitors, signed it, that I didn't have one. So it's a lot more complicated when you're a refugee, when you come into a country you have nothing and you're applying for a passport. They need a lot of details, a lot of addresses, a lot of, you know, country you're in before, you know. But it all paid off in the end.
It certainly did. And thank you very much for joining us to talk us through it, Zach. And enjoy tomorrow. I know the Department of Justice will be live streaming that event on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter from 7 p.m. Zach Moradi, thank you very much.